This week, the impressive precious metals rebound continued with silver stealing the show, closing above $20.50, plus gold held firm over $1,300. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. I'm your host, Chris Waltzek. In this August 9th broadcast, the show starts off with the Market Weatherman Report with the latest economic news and trends affecting your portfolio. For nearly 2 months, gold and silver have held above the lows, suggesting that the bottom may be in place. In fact, both gold and silver are backward dated from 2014 through 2018 and 2019. Joining me with their take on the sector, two precious metals bulls. David Morgan, the silver investor, agrees that the bottom may be in place. We discuss the COT report and conclude that the biggest risk facing investors, it could be not owning the metals. Next at bat, Charles Goyette is concerned that the U.S. dollar may soon resume its decade-long slide, sending inflation soaring nationwide and putting everyday goods and services just outside the reach of the typical family. We discuss the implications of the endgame of fiat money and just how to prepare your portfolio for the maximum benefit. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Mostly sunny weather conditions appeared over the precious metals exchanges. The dollar fell sharply below support on news of much better than expected economic growth in China. Investors scrambled for the inflation hedges of choice, gold and silver, on solid economic reports worldwide. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold regained the $1,300 support level, finishing the trading session at $1,314, near the break-even point for the week. Silver outperformed the yellow metal, picking up about 70 cents, over 3% for the week, holding over $2,050. Silver and gold are now simultaneously backward dated. Silver backwardation begins in the May 2014 contract and runs all the way through July of 2018. Gold backwardation begins in the June 2014 contract and runs through June of 2019. In my market career, this is the first time that I can recall seeing gold and silver so deeply backward dated concurrently. From my vantage point, it's a very positive development. Meanwhile, the rousing economic nation, China, announced solid industrial output climbing about 10% in July from a year ago, exceeding the most bullish of expectations. Gold blasted higher by 25 on Thursday on the heels of that surge in imports and exports into China. The news sparked a commodities buying spree as investors anticipated higher prices amid the economic rebound. The news helped both gold and silver retake those psychologically significant levels. The National Bureau of Statistics of China showed that exports climbed 5% in July over the last year, nearly twice the expected figure. Exports to the U.S. and the European Union, China's largest trading partners, increased for the first time in 5 months. Although the figures represent only a month's data, some analysts expect the nation to reach its growth target. According to officials in China, exports and imports will improve in the second half of the year on increased demand and supportive government policies. Adding to the bullish sentiment, solid gold demand from China's retail customers is an encouraging sign. Customers continue to queue up for the opportunity to procure gold and silver bullion, a right that was only recently restored and widely coveted. In fact, the World Gold Council now expects the nation to become the leading gold importer. China imported 105 tons of gold from Hong Kong, more than twice as much as last year. This is yet another positive for the gold price because of the ban on exporting gold. So once the metal crosses the border from Hong Kong, it virtually falls off the global radar screen, reducing overall supply. China remains the world's leading copper consumer. The metal soared this week. Most of the gains were attributed to China's economic rebound, a nation that craves copper for its industrial and manufacturing properties. Bottom line on the metals. Well, much of this week's positive action is likely a spillover from the QE-friendly news from the FOMC, ECB, and the Bank of England meetings last week. Still, positive economic news from China and the U.S. is a plus for the metals, particularly silver, which has important industrial applications. For this week's stock picks and all the forecasts and related updates, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, following 6 weeks of sunny weather, clouds eventually must return, and they did this week over the U.S. Stock Exchange. Investors viewed positive economic reports as a possible sign that the Fed could curtail its QE stimulus plans, reducing liquidity throughout the financial sector. By Friday's closing bell on the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials gave back 232 points, about 1.5%, finishing at 15,425. The S&P 500 gave back all of last week's gains, about 1%, ending at 1691, up over 1%, while the Nasdaq fared best, dropping less than a percentage point off 29 and finishing the week at 3660. In domestic economic news, new applications for unemployment benefits remained near a five-year low, suggesting that the economy is improving. According to a Labor Department report on Thursday, initial jobless claims climbed 5,000 to 333,000, a bit lower than expected. Still, the four-week average, a more robust indicator, declined by 6,250, the best showing in over 5 years. Unemployment claims tend to be a bit volatile in the summer months due to gyrations in certain sectors. The U.S. economy continues to add about 192,000 new jobs on average per month this year, and that's an improvement over last year. Initial claims from 2 weeks earlier were revised from 326,000 up to 328,000. Turning to interesting stock picks, well, last week's Flagstar Bancorp offers various financial products and services to customers, consumers, and homeowners. Although the share price advance slowed somewhat this week, according to DCF analysis, the stock remains undervalued by about 50%, plus quarterly earnings are accelerating on an annual basis. The technical position is compelling. The stock only recently rebounded from the 50-period moving average support level, suggesting that an advance to a new high of $30 is possible. However, in the near term, shares are reacting, so until forward momentum returns to the markets, a bit of caution is advised. Bottom line on Wall Street. Although it's a bit premature to call a top in this impressive stock bull market, as I outlined in the Alpha Stocks report last week, the housing sector did indeed roll over, and it now has fallen through key support. For the rest of this report and all the stock picks, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with author and radio personality Charles Goyette and the silver investor David Morgan. Charles Goyette penned The Dollar Meltdown, a New York Times bestseller, as well as his latest Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Restoring America's Free Economy. Welcome, Charles Goyette.
Chris, always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Let's begin the discussion today with an overview of the domestic economy. You know, according to the BLS number last week, it was announced that the national unemployment rate slipped to the lowest level in about 5 years, down to 7.4%, inching closer to the Fed's threshold there of 6.5%, their target. What wasn't noted was that most of the jobs created were temporary, part-time, and this kind of leads us to that U6 unemployment figure, the former number used by the Fed, which includes job seekers who are settling for part-time work when really looking for full-time work. And when we look at that U6 unemployment number, the true unemployment rate is somewhere between 15 and 20%. Which number is more accurate from your vantage point?
Well, clearly the U6 number is more accurate. I mean, it makes very clear that we are still, I mean, if you think about this, we've had literally trillions of dollars of Fed manipulation. We've had trillions of dollars in fiscal deficits. We've had a skyrocketing of the national debt. We've had secret, unsupervised, hidden loans by the Fed to the tune of $16 trillion or so to, without oversight, to foreign corporations, foreign banks, domestic corporations, and so on. All of this over in the course of a recession that began over 5 years ago, we're still in it. We're still era levels of unemployment.
It really makes one wonder how they can get away with it. And I think the answer is really somewhat simple. I mean, it comes down to food stamp programs, which allows the everyday family member to walk into the grocery store instead of having to stand outside at soup kitchens and bread lines. They can walk in with the rest of everyone out there, and it's business as usual. Swipe those debit cards and get a bag of groceries or two. So the unemployment numbers can be held artificially low when you are able to hide the, I think, the physical manifestations that we would normally see in an economy that is virtually near depression levels. And speaking of depression levels, though, precious metals have been depressed lately, but we did just record the best month in a year on that it's too early to taper that $86 billion monthly buying spree in their QE program. Now, this has quieted rumors that the Fed was going to lower the QE to $65 billion a month in purchases. The ECB and the Bank of England also gave no guidance or little guidance last week. They held rates steady. So now that the rate hike scare is passing, do you expect precious metals to benefit?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, precious metals are going to benefit in any case because the economy is being run by madmen. And I mean that without exaggeration. These are the people that told us that, well, their original forecast, the growth forecast, they've never been right about anything. Their growth forecast for 2013 originally ran up to as high as 3%. Then a couple of months ago, they pulled it back and they said, well, maybe I think they said 2.4 to 2.8% or something like that. And we just got the latest GDP numbers for we're well below 2%. As a matter of fact, Chris, we're below the inflation rate. By the Fed's own questionable calculation, the inflation rate is 1.8% over the last 12 months. The rate of growth of GDP just in the last quarter was 1.7. You compound that, though, with the prior quarter, which was 1.1. There's no way we'll make 2. We'll pull in this year below the inflation rate, which is where we are for the first 6 months. So meanwhile, you've got the Federal Reserve buying, so far, first 6 months of this year, buying 100%, buying the equivalent of every dollar of Treasury debt that has been issued, actually closer to 104%. So that means that that all of the Fed's buying the first 6 months of this year of U.S. Treasury instruments, mortgage securities, and more is equivalent to all of the debt issued by the U.S. Treasury. I mean, the implications of this thing are absolutely shattering. This sounds like endgame to me.
We tend to forget that the inflation number is also massaged. The GDP hinges on the inflation number. So, shadow stats, and we also produce our own GDP numbers here. If you include the more accurate inflation number, you could make the case that economic growth has remained negative or near zero for almost 14 consecutive years. But even if we don't want to go back that far, we just want to look at the current number, we are approaching at least recessionary numbers right now. Steer back to precious metals for a moment. You know, demand for the metals remains red hot worldwide. The gold premium at the Shanghai over the London price, roughly $20. According to rumor, though, China and Russia are vastly understating their gold reserves, that they might be preparing for a regional gold-backed currency. I'd like your thoughts.
I mean, I think it's going to happen. I would tell you the reason instantly when my book, The Dollar Meltdown, was published, instantly, the largest publishing company in China bought the rights to publish it in China because it alluded to the fact that if they keep doing what they're doing and we keep doing what we are doing, that they will be the dominant economic powerhouse on the face of the earth for the next couple of hundred years. And we're clearly headed that way. Look, there is a lot of smoke. I'm sure you talk about this on your program all the time. There's a lot of smoke, and there's certainly a fair amount of fire under the question of whether physical gold depositories really have their gold, whether it's been sold out, pledged out, used as collateral elsewhere, whether, you know, the question of sorting out the title, who actually holds title to it when it's been used in swap agreements over and over and over again. But even without seeing all of that out, it is very clear that there is a mega trend of the movement of gold from the West to the East. And the historical record of these is very clear that we will accordingly become less dominant, less influential in the affairs of mankind on this globe, and they will become more so. We are squandering our patrimony for a mess of paper money.
Great segue into my next topic here. You know, some sources indicate that there is a slow motion run on gold at the COMEX underway with stockpiles depleted, reaching dangerously low levels. Although the exchange is the world's largest, the Shanghai Gold Exchange actually delivers 9 times more gold to its clients. So I think that begs the question, is a default inevitable at the COMEX, and where is all the gold going to? And I think you answered that in your last statement. To the east.
Well, I live very close, more than just tangentially close, very close to the COMEX's shenanigans back in the late 1970s and early 1980 when they effectively fleeced market participants. Instead of being a market neutral exchange institution, they decided to tilt in favor of the board members of the COMEX, and they instituted liquidation only rules in the silver market. So these institutions have, I think it's best for all people that have to interact with these institutions to understand that they are not market institutions. They are not market neutral institutions. You have to be very careful about every representation that they make, and that not only includes the representations about their function as an exchange, but also the representations as functional representations about their depositories and what they actually hold. There's a lot more to this story. There are layers and layers and layers of this onion that need to be peeled back, and I just urge your listeners and my own readers not to be victimized by these exchanges.
The false signals that they are leading to certainly discouraged, you know, millions of people away from ownership and physical purchases, when in fact it may just be one of the last few times to actually procure these metals at reasonable prices.
Well, I agree with you about that. Let me just say a word about that. People that look forlorn about the breakdown of the gold price, I look at this as a gift. If some of the major financial institutions of the planet want to try to manipulate the gold and silver markets in such a manner as to give me a gift of lower prices for an indefinite period of time, I'm very grateful to them. I think it's the best thing that could have happened. I mean, if you were planning on selling tomorrow, maybe it's not. But if you understand the long-term implications, if you understand what happens to paper money, that they all have ephemeral lives, that they all end up the same way, if you understand that this isn't our first currency crisis rodeo, you should be very grateful to these institutions and their manipulations for giving us an opportunity to continue to add to our investment at advantageous prices.
Look at it from the perspective of gold ownership. It's turning out to be the best way to participate in this final stage of the move. Time is on your side. There's no future contract. There's no options expiration. There's no data that you need to watch. Your gold is going to last beyond even your progeny. It's a great time to look at physical. But I also wanted to move on here. We're reading reports of new ways that governments appear to be trying to discourage gold ownership. For instance, in Houston, gold sales now require fingerprinting and mugshot. I need to throw in an anecdote here, because some are claiming that's just for jewelry, although my sources are indicating that it comes down to the individual shop. So please, no more nasty grams when I mention this. We're not coming down on Houston, but we're just saying that this is a growing trend we're seeing. For instance, in India, they, of course, are limiting gold imports via duties and taxes, but it still amounts to government intervention. And then in Europe, ownership is now being limited in many places. In the short term, these tactics clearly have an impact. But in the long term, do you agree that they will fail in a big way and might even backfire, leading to a mad dash for precious metals and much higher prices?
Yeah, they always backfire, and they always fail in the long run. You know, I wrote a piece the other day about these state entities that believe that they are the creators of the money system rather than, you know, just institutions that ran and got around in front of the parade that people had created spontaneously of themselves. I mean, that's effectively how money was developed, by the free exchange of people. And it was only later that kings and rulers and despots and congresses and so on tried to get themselves, you know, in front of the action and take a piece of everything. But they always fail. Just the other day, the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, sealed his own fate by passing, his cabinet passed an edict that every transaction now by every member of the commercial classes, by everybody, service providers, manufacturers, merchants, had to be in Syrian pounds. And anybody caught violating that new edict, that new decree, was subject to 10 years imprisonment at hard labor. We have seen this before. People ask, you know, back in the 50s, I'm sure you're much too young to remember it, but back in the 50s, the question was, in presidential debates and so on, who lost China? That question is never answered, but the true answer to it is that, they started issuing these funny monetary decrees, including, form of payment and price controls and so on, and Chiang Kai-shek violated them out into the streets and shot them, and the consequence was that he lost all of the support of the merchant class that he'd had up until that time, and prepared the way for Mao Zedong to take over. The same sort of thing happened in South Korea. The same sort of thing has been reenacted over and over and over again in mankind's history. It is always a war between fiat money, between government and government money, and real money like gold. Ultimately, gold always wins, but there can be a lot of blood spilled along the way.
Another cogent point. However, how is it then that we have forgotten this fact? I mean, it's in the textbooks, it's written on the walls, it's all over the internet. How did we lose this knowledge that you've tried to convey here? And I think the answer is pretty simple. We enjoyed a monopoly on the reserve currency for so long that we've actually begun to believe that it is a divine right. I'm not the first to mention this. I mean, you've written on it extensively, talked about it for decades. Ron Paul, so many others, Peter Schiff. It's something that we overlook here. We've forgotten, as you say, currencies are ephemeral. They can evaporate overnight. I mean, these things can change on a dime, and fortunes can be lost and reversed in a very brief period of time.
I raised my children in an urban environment in a city, nice city, Scottsdale, Arizona. But when they were kids, they believed that, milk and eggs came from the grocery store. They never bothered to think about the whole messy business of farming and cows and chickens in the background. And it's the same with the American people. All of American people now have had the experience of, using paper money and buying things with it and receiving change and taking goods from merchants and buying tickets to movie theaters and putting gas in their car with paper money. So they have never really bothered to question the presuppositions of it. What gives this paper value? Why can't I go print some myself and be rich? And so it's just a question of refamiliarizing people with the reality of the nature of money in the background. And of course, that will happen. I mean, if they don't want to educate themselves before the calamity will prove to be very educational. And on the other side of it, nobody for another generation or two will forget, that paper money was supposed to be just a warehouse receipt or a claim check or representation of physical gold or physical silver that was lodged and held by somebody honest somewhere. That lesson will be relearned, but it has slipped from the consciousness of the American people for the time being.
If you back your paper money with something, i.e. not fiat, you actually do back it with silver or gold, as, per our Constitution, that's the way it was for 100 years, and we essentially didn't have massive hyperinflations until the Civil War. Then it really doesn't come down to paper money, but you must back your currency with something, or ultimately it will implode. And I think another aspect we really haven't addressed too closely here, the rest of the world is losing faith in the dollar. And we hear story after story of Iran exchanging oil with China and Russia and other nations, bypassing the petrodollar arrangement that essentially held up our economy for decades with virtually no output from American workers required. Just the need, the demand to have the dollar as a currency of exchange to receive petro was enough to force the rest of the world to work itself just to procure those dollars. And that's coming to an end. We're seeing the BRIC nations and many others steer away from the U.S. dollar. Any comments?
Well, for people like ourselves that watch this thing very carefully, it seems to be happening very, very fast. We see all kinds of new multinational bilateral agreements all around the world to settle exchange in local and domestic currencies, in currencies of former competitors. I mean, we've had, you know, bilateral, I mean, nothing like the fiat dollar standard, the world reserve standard of the declining dollar, has been able to shove Russia and China together with similar commercial settlement interests. You know, they have developed their own bilateral agreements to settle trades with one another. This is going on all over the world, and it's a little bit perplexing to see that it's not on the front pages of the business newspapers and so on. But it is the dollar standard is the dollar standard is deteriorating before our very eyes. And, you know, foreign governments, foreign central banks don't mind fleecing their own people with their own fiat currencies, and they will continue to do so to the extent they can. But they're very well aware of how the game works, and not many of them are too willing to be fleeced by ours. And so, you know, nobody wants to start a panic. You know, nobody wants to, you know, to exchange all of their reserves in the wink of an eye and try to be the, you know, try to, you know, force everybody into line to do the same thing all at once, but they can begin to move surreptitiously out of the dollar as a reserve, and believe me, they are doing it.
Here's, I think, an appropriate analogy. I mean, you could have a house, a 100-year-old home, built on a very solid foundation, multi-million-dollar estate. You live in Florida. Just so happens it's built on limestone. And, you know, before you know it, a sinkhole completely consumes the home and it falls into a giant pit. And this is why I think Americans have become so complacent. Not just Americans, but Westerners in general. We've forgotten that there is the threat of that sinkhole. And that erosion remains invisible. You think you're impervious, but it's just below terra firma. In a moment's notice, the currency evaporates, and we saw that in Weimar, and we've seen it in Argentina and Venezuela. There's so many instances over the past 100 years. That's another show. As we wrap up here today, any other thoughts, any other topics?
Well, I think people ought to keep their eye on an increasingly dangerous geopolitical situation. We still have, you know, chest thumpers out there that are constantly looking for a place to involve the United States deeper and deeper. The military is very clear that they don't want anything with a war for Iran. But, you have people constantly flogging for war with Iran. If you talk about something that will act as the tripwire to suddenly ending the dollar reserve standard, that's the sort of thing that can do it. You know, we can find ourselves with Obama's pivot to the Southeast Asia. We can find ourselves involved in taking sides because of treaty obligations over a fight for, you know, a couple of squalid rocky outcroppings somewhere in the ocean that nobody really cares about, inhabited only by a few goats, and find ourselves in a geopolitical confrontation that ends the prosperity of the American people for a very, very long time and ends the supremacy of the dollar. So I think the geopolitical backdrop now is really, really precarious, and that is why nobody wants to be, much less short gold, nobody wants to be without physical gold or physical silver or both in their possession that they can get their hands on for sudden events. Every family needs to have some. It's our responsibilities to protect ourselves and our families first. And once we've done so, then maybe there are other opportunities.
This is a bit off topic, but I mean, you covered, I think, something that's so important, this perpetual warfare we find ourselves in. It's straight out of George Orwell's 1984. I mean, he's rolling over and he's doing backflips in the grave here. You know, this war is peace nonsense that's going on. I mean, you can't have prosperity or peace without war. We support our troops and their families and all those that have shed blood for our nation. Many of my family members going back generations did just that, and we're grateful for their sacrifice. No disrespect intended. But let's not disgrace their actions on our behalf by becoming a warrior nation. Imagine if the $1 trillion spent thus far in the Middle East, instead of building endless bases, what if we had rebuilt our infrastructure? Now, to where we were pushing ourselves away from the need for petrol and crude oil and and we were focusing on solar panels. We're doing just that at the Gold Seek Radio Studio. Is almost entirely powered now by photovoltaics. Okay, solar panels, battery array backup that's powered by the sun. Due to technological advances, incredible advances since 1980, the last time this was the rage, are possible today. We can rebuild our infrastructure, and when you do that, you create jobs. If we don't learn the lesson now, are we not just going to keep pouring money into that endless pit over there? It's a quagmire. We need to be focusing, I guess what I'm trying to say, on the domestic economy. What do you think?
I mean, I'm a decorated military veteran myself, but you cannot support the troops if you let your government lie to you. And it looks like we're very, very close to having the lid blown off the Benghazi story and what was really going on there. And it will turn out, either way that it goes, it will turn out that the American people have been deceived. But if Benghazi was a CIA secret gun-running operation supplying armaments to al-Qaeda that we went to war with in Iraq, supplying weaponry to al-Qaeda affiliates for Syria, then there is much more to how we are being led around than meets the eye. You cannot be supportive of the troops if you let the people be lied to about what we're doing and what our interests are. But I think if the lid blows off of that one, then it will tilt the debate in the future to non-intervention, and maybe we can do just what you've described and rebuild the American dream.
Red, blue, and broke all over, restoring America's free economy. Could you please tell folks more how they can find out about your latest work, everything you're involved in right now, and how they can pick up a copy of your book?
Well, for sure. You can get The Dollar Meltdown or Red and Blue and Broke All Over at any bookstore. I mean, clearly on Amazon and the places that people like to shop online. In addition to that, the Freedom and Prosperity Letter is a monthly. You can Google Freedom and Prosperity Letter to subscribe. Freedom and Prosperity Letter, published by Weiss Research, one of the leading newsletter publishers in the country, the Freedom and Prosperity Letter. And also, I do a daily, twice a day, radio commentary with Ron Paul on radio stations all over America. We're on about 125 radio stations. If your favorite local radio station does not carry Ron Paul's America with Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, by all means call them and ask them to carry it. Ron Paul's America, they can contact Courtside Productions for it. Great to speak with you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the silver investor himself, David Morgan, who pens the Morgan Report and runs silver-investor.com. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Thank you very much, Chris.
All right, after posting three consecutive winning weeks, the best month of the year for the precious metals, and the biggest daily gain in over a year, the metals rebound paused last week. We saw some dollar strength. The Fed, the Bank of England, and the ECB all held rates and stimulus measures steady. Any comments here on the pause and whether or not you think the lows are in?
Well, the pause, I think, is probably needed, and obviously there's sort of a war going on, you could call it that, between the supremacy of a paper money system, a fiat currency, or specie money. But more important than that is the low end. And I think the low is in. I put out a update on our alert system. We have a unique system that's actually pops up in front of your screen to let you know that we have an alert or an update if you're a member of our service. And I sent this out on the 28th, or just after the 28th of June, where we had what's called a key reversal. And the key reversal is called that for a reason. And you basically hit a new low, and then you close at a new high. Not a new high, an all-time high, but a high previous. You know. And so when that took place, what it indicates, and it could be in any commodity, is that on a new low, if it's going lower, you're not going to have much buying activity or short covering or both. So you don't know if it's short covering, you don't know if it's new buyers, but you know one thing. The price isn't staying there. In fact, there's so much buying that it's forcing the price higher, higher, and higher, and forcing it so high that it closes above the previous high of the day before. That's what took place. So it's called a key reversal. That's what took place. I looked at it since then. we have trended around the 1950 level, as you just opened the segment with, and it's looking pretty strong. Now, is it in or not? We don't know until we know. And I know that's a stupid statement, but it could hit a new low. It could test that area maybe in late August. I'm not sure. I'm fairly certain, however, that the low's in. And what I do know, for all practical purposes, it's in. So if you're going to, like, unless you're like a day trader, buying at these levels, especially if buying the physical market, makes a lot of sense. Gold did not make a key reversal, but it has held near the 1300 level. I know it's been breached recently, but it seems to be building a base. So there's nothing real scientific about technical analysis. I like it. I think it is a useful tool, regardless of whether or not the market is manipulated. Everything that manipulated or not goes into the data, and you can look at it, and these trend lines do hold. There are certain ways that I trade that are very different than almost anybody you'll watch. Nonetheless, we've been successful, not every. And, of course, as you well know, Chris, I'm well beyond just being a trader, but I'm one of the few that does both long-term buy and hold investing, and I'm able to swing trade, certainly not day trade. I like to do position trading, and the best one we ever did was getting in before the QE2 announcement, and I saw silver break out of the 19 level. It went from 19 to 26, and I took the trade off. Right after that, it came up through 26 after QE2 was announced, and I got back on it. The market knows more than any of us, and that's how I trade. The market was telling me it wanted to go higher. It got back on at 26 and rode it all the way up to the $48 high. So certainly, I don't know if I'm going to get a trade that good again in this market. I hopefully will. But nonetheless, if you know how to pay attention, manipulated or not, again, I want to enforce that, you can make money in this market.
So we got about a 100% retracement there in silver. So even if you're not a raging bull, as we both are on silver long term, you know, from a technical perspective here and even a valuation perspective, I can't think of a better time to add physical into your portfolio here. The risk is clearly missing the upside move to 40s and 50s on silver we could see in the next few years. So another interesting aspect we've seen recently, I'm sure you've been watching the futures COT report as well as the backwardation. We had an unusual situation develop about a week or two ago where both silver and gold were backward dated in the exact same contracts throughout 2014. Now, that's mostly rectified itself, but we're still seeing some spot backwardation in both contracts. Any comments?
Yeah, I do pay attention to backwardation, but I do not put a lot of energy into what you just spoke about. A lot of that in the 2014, 15, 16, 18, as far as you want to go, if you're using European options or you're using even American ones, are very small trades. I mean, I went over this thinking perhaps I'd missed something. I mean, I've been in these markets for 40 years. I certainly don't know it all, but I know a great deal, and I'm always learning more. So I called my futures broker and made sure that I wasn't missing something. And basically what happens in those situations normally, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not missing something, but I certainly have ferreted this thing out, is these guys are lazy. I mean, these things are so far out, people don't mark them to market for days or weeks at a time. So it shows on the books as a backwardation. I won't argue a fact. A fact is a fact. But does it have any significance? That's the point. And the point is it does not have nearly the significance that some of my very good friends make about this. So it's been backwardation forever and a day, and then it means this, it means that. No. When backwardation means something is when the front month of the spot contract that has no limit on it is so far above the next month out that it is wildly exaggerated. As an example, true backwardation that really means something is if you had to pay $30 an ounce for silver right now and the next month out is $18.75. Now, that's backwardation. Now, I'm exaggerating to make a point, but that's the idea. It could be like $22 versus $18.75. That's backwardation. Normally, if that happens, it rectifies itself within a few trading sessions. I've never seen it go for more than about three. And I said, I've been here for four decades watching these markets. So that is something that would get me excited, is if you saw gold or silver or platinum, palladium, or any commodity, really. But, of course, the metals is what I specialize in, where you see that kind of backwardation. In this contango spread versus the LIBOR index versus a cup of coffee with a lime squeeze or not really doesn't get my interest that much. People spend, in my view, way too much energy looking at, I think, the minutia here, where it's really not that significant. When you've got real contracts in the futures market and you've got to buy it now because you can't get it anywhere else, and you're willing to pay 5, 10, 15, 20% over the next month out, now you've got my attention.
You know, we've seen over the past year or so short covering by the institutions. So we've got a scenario that generally tends to coincide with market bounces. Any comments on the COT report?
Yeah, several. We do an update for our members on the COT report every week and post it to our members only part of the website. What we've noticed is that this is the first time in two decades where you have seen the shift where we are now, and I'll explain. Where you have basically the commercials, or what's known as the insiders or banking interest, as long as they are, with the other side of the trade being the trading funds that are usually wrong about 99% of the time. However, I want to be fair. These trading funds are short from around the $26 level in silver and about the $15.50 level in gold. And they are right now, technically or actually, at a very good profit in both the metals. However, the important point is that they haven't started covering yet. So it makes me really think deeply. What's going on here? The commercials that are almost always right are basically longer than they've been in two decades. That's a long time. Secondly, the people that are holding the bag usually are the trading funds. They're holding the bag maybe. That's a question mark to be determined. And lastly, and most importantly, how is the market going to move to where to such a level, in other words, from the 1950 in silver to the 26 level, where they start to really lose, not that they haven't shorted below the 26 level, they have. So, Chris, I really think it's a significant change. It's very important. And yet, how it's going to unravel, I really can't offer a lot there. I just can see that normally what I know is that the trading funds lose, the commercials win. The commercials are set up expecting the metals to go higher, not lower. And we've already seen a key reversal. So how it unwinds from here, I'm remiss to say that this thing could do a rocket launch, because I really don't want to get people excited. There's another radio show that you're probably well aware of, and and this is my opinion. These guys do a great job, and the opinion's free. I mean, come on, we can all have an opinion, and that's great. But they give the impression, in my opinion, that they're always ready for the next rocket launch. But that would surprise, I think, almost everybody right now. Because everyone's thinking we're in the summer doldrums, nothing can happen, it's probably going to just go back and forth in August. I just talked to somebody recently that says, it's going to go like this for another 2 years. So there's a lot of sentiment out there, even among the bullish camp. The last thing anyone's expecting, including yours truly, is all of a sudden this thing to ignite and really run.
No, exactly, and that's just about the time when you would expect to see something like that, when even the bulls are lamenting the market action. So good point. Let's move on to gold and silver demand. You know, we've seen red-hot demand worldwide. Gold premiums continue to be high at the Shanghai Exchange relative to London. China appears to be compensating for a lot of the lack of gold imports into India, the second biggest buyer. Many analysts are expecting them to earn the top title pretty soon. What are your thoughts on demand, given your key reversal scenario, solid COT and backwardation?
Well, I think it's the most basic evidence that we have. I mean, I've said a long time ago that we were seeing a huge macro shift between wealth in the West and wealth in the East, meaning that wealth would deteriorate in the West and increase in the East. And really, the harbinger, the king of all kings, is gold. Gold is a great barometer on who's really holding the wealth, and that's moving into China. I've always thought that silver would probably be the Achilles heel of the system. In other words, that silver is scarcer than gold or what's been mined, but as far as investment form. There's about 2 billion ounces in investment form. That's bullion bars, which is 1 billion, which is a number you hear all the time. There's only 1 billion ounces of silver. Well, there's 1 billion ounces in commercial bar form, and the other billion ounces is in silver rounds and silver coins, like silver eagles, silver maples, the Luna series from Perth Mint, and that type of thing. So there's 2 billion ounces in investment-grade silver, about 5 in gold. The point being that the shift is continuing, and I think gold is a lot tighter than silver right now. I mean, gold is a much more establishment. Banks hold gold. China's been buying gold. And so it's showing up in the gold market. I mean, you've got the German situation. They can get the gold back. Give us 7 years to give it back to you. You have this Ambro Bank out of this Dutch bank that says, yeah, we have physical gold. Oh, we don't really have physical gold anymore. You're going to have to settle in cash. So there's all of these really right into your face verifiable facts that show that the gold market is not right. Something's very wrong in the gold market. You have the COMEX drawdown in gold, which is a pittance of gold. I mean, the amount of gold on the COMEX is ridiculous. Most people know that COMEX is really for thrills and giggles. It's a paper trading vehicle for the most part. Very little physical comes off there, but a lot has. So someone's forcing their hand and saying, you know, it's basically like a card game, and they're saying, show me, don't tell me. Show me the gold. So a lot is happening on the gold side, and I think that's probably where it's going to break, Chris. It really looks like it's lining up that way to me.
Mike Maloney, you may have read one of his recent articles. He points out that the COMEX may be close to 10 times the volume or size of the Shanghai, but Shanghai actually delivers 9 times more precious metals than does the COMEX. So which exchange should have the most clout? I think he's kind of making the argument there that the exchange that is taking care of its customers and delivering the bullion. I'd also like your thoughts on what's happening in Russia and China. You know, you talked about them accumulating. Well, there is some speculation that Russia and China actually are accumulating much larger stockpiles and reserves of the precious metals than they are reporting in anticipation of a regional precious metals backed currency.
That definitely could be the case. I'll borrow Mary Katuska's comment at the Cambridge House show in January. He called Vladimir Putin the next Peter the Great. You know, I think that from the Russian perspective is probably true. This man does not back down. He is a very strong personality, to put it in polite terms. And they, meaning the leaders of both China and Russia, understand the value of gold. Not that the leaders in the West do, but they've already thrown in the towel a long time ago and decided that they could. The Anglo, and I wrote about this in the Morgan Report. It's one, I think, one of the more interesting pieces I wrote. It was not only the shift that we started your show with, but how this is playing out in the mega, mega elitist sphere. And that is that there's this, in my view, misidea that the New World Order or the banking elite, if you will, have got this tight control on everything, and that every move that's made is a chess match and on and on. I said, no, it's not like that at all. What it really is there's two factions. You have the Anglo-American Empire on one side, and you've got the East faction on the other, which is, as you mentioned, could be the BRICS. That's how I named it. You have Brazil, Russia, India, and China, but the big players are Russia and China. And they're not taking much guff from the U.S., really. I mean, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but you don't see, you know, when Geithner was Secretary of the Treasury, no longer is, as I know, but when, you know, when they were having problems, they weren't flying to Washington. They just said, come, and they flew to Beijing, right? I mean, a lot is going on here, and the old adage, he who owns the gold makes the rules, still takes hold. So to answer your question, yes, they're accumulating a great deal more than they're showing in the official records. They do know that it's important, and I think that it's going to shift continually until the reserve currency of the world is no longer the U.S. dollar. And, of course, me and many others have forecast that a long time ago. How it unwinds, we don't know. Hopefully it will be in a manner that doesn't disrupt the markets too much, but it could go the other way. And certainly from history, we know that it could get rather interesting, to put it politely.
I'd also like your comments on this slow motion trend we've seen, not just domestically, but also in Europe and elsewhere, where authorities appear to be making it a bit more difficult to own, buy, and sell the precious metals. Some people have tried to point out that this could take some of gold and silver's luster away as an investment class, but from my vantage point, this should actually be viewed as a big plus for the precious metals, because it appears that the powers that be are starting to recognize that this is maybe the last stand for the individual investor to shield themselves against lost purchasing power, as well as confiscation and things of that nature.
Well, it does concern me, but I think it's an individual choice. And I think you have to, at some point, make up your mind as far as where you stand. I mean, if you are going to let the powers that be dictate everything that you do, you know, when you get up in the morning, how often you can go use the restroom and that type of thing. I mean, I'm being a bit facetious to make the point. Then by all means, stay in their paper paradigm and do whatever they tell you. And they tell you to march off that cliff over there, then please get in line and do it. As far as I'm concerned, you know, there are things that we're standing up for, and the freest thing you can have is free money. And gold and silver have always represented that. Now, I'm not advocating you go in the gray market or the black market, which in most cases is really the free market, but I do think it is a very symbolic and real situation where it's a very good view of what's ahead, and that is that they will try, perhaps, to make it more and more difficult to accumulate or buy real physical metal. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, basically, you got to be true to yourself, true to your family, true to what is real. And if you know for a fact, see, the one thing that I haven't said in a while is that there's one thing in the financial markets I can guarantee. One thing I can guarantee. Now, you're not allowed in this field to say anything that's guaranteed. But I can guarantee this. Every fiat currency that's ever been tried has failed, 100% of them. The U.S. dollar hasn't failed yet, but the percentages are so high you could almost guarantee that it will fail at some point in time. The question then becomes, is it worth worrying about? Is it going to happen in my lifetime, or is it going to happen five lifetimes down the road? I think it's going to happen within my lifetime, but that's the big argument. You have a lot of establishment types that think that it's not worth talking about. It could happen, but it's so far out. It's such a remote idea that you have nothing to be concerned with. I disagree. And as you point out, Chris, look, they're making it more and more difficult. The other side is, and I'll add on to what you asked, is, well, I'll be taxed heavily. All these things are possible. But I ask, what is the alternative? What else is possible? What else are you going to do? And I wouldn't advocate it, but I could suggest that you think it through. I mean, why are gold and silver important? You can hear, look at history. There used to be a joke about, you know, having gold coins to pay off the border guards. There's a reason for those type of things. Think it through, study, do your own homework, do your own due diligence, be true to yourself, but understand there's a price to pay for everything. There's a price to stay there's a price to pay being in the paper paradigm. And there's also a price to pay by breaking free of it.
But I would then counter by asking, how safe do you feel that those digital numbers in that online bank account, how convinced are you that they don't just get reset tomorrow, or that you don't have a MF Global scenario, a Cyprus-like scenario where everything past a certain level, 100% is confiscated by the state or by creditors? We're seeing a growing and alarming trend of bail-ins seems to be working its way into our legislation. Anything we haven't covered today you'd like to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
No, I'll just point out that, you know, the website's still up and strong. It's silver-investor.com, or you can get to the same website by typing in themorganreport.com. We do offer a lot of free information. You can get on our free email list that's only weekly. I don't like bombing people every day with offers or that type of thing. So once a week, we do a summary of most of the shows I've been on, like this one. We have a YouTube channel called Silver Guru, and I have a Twitter feed. The Twitter feed is for those that really want to stay abreast of what's happening on the economic system, and with an emphasis on gold and silver, but I do post things outside of that. So that's for free as well. I do still do a lot of speaking, and I'm starting to get into different venues. I'm speaking at a survival conference in San Diego on the 20th of September, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Just came back from a Liberty Mastermind in Dallas last month, and that was a very interesting venue, sort of like the Freedom Fest, but on a much smaller scale. And, of course, the resource shows are still up and active, although they've deteriorated quite a bit with the lackluster performance in not only the metals but the underlying mining shares. Nonetheless, as you started with, Chris, and I want to emphasize as I close, there is no alternative to the paper paradigm other than gold and silver. If you had a fence in an imaginary yard somewhere and you put gold and silver on one side of the fence as a financial or monetary asset, Everything else that exists, a stock, a bond, an option, a life insurance policy, a prepaid medical plan, anything you care to name, anything is on the other side of the fence. So if you think that everything on one side of the fence is safe and that's the way to live your life, I suggest you reconsider the fact, because the only thing, if anything goes wrong on that one side of the fence, you've got gold and silver on the other side. It's the only assets that are monetary assets outside the financial paradigm. It's something to consider. You did a better job of it probably than me, spelling it out to people, thinking that, you know, they can't be Cyprus or that their MF Global account is just fine or that type of thing. Think it through, people. It's your money. It's your life. It's your decision, and it's your responsibility.
Well said, David Morgan. We want to thank you, and please return soon. We're going to look forward to seeing that key reversal lead us out of the doldrums in gold and silver.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. From an overall perspective, how can the dollar be strong when we're printing so many of them each month? For that matter, how can the housing market be classified as recovering when, according to CoreLogic's June report, 19.8% of all residential properties with a mortgage were still in negative equity as of the first quarter of 2013. On top of that, of the 39 million residential properties that do have positive equity, just under one-third of them have less than 20% equity. When you add it all up, 23%, which is almost one in four homes with a mortgage, are under-equified. And 19.8%, which represents one in five homes with a mortgage, have negative equity, or more specifically, are underwater. The term underwater means you cannot breathe. It means you are suffocating and technically drowning. Next time you go outside, look down the street you live on and know that on average, across the U.S., one in five households is suffocating, often in silent desperation. Is it your neighbor whom you know? Is it the family you don't know? Or is it you? One in five households suffocating financially doesn't sound like a recovering economy to me. But understand, that's how the illusion is perpetrated. The mainstream media's continual reporting about how well the economy is starting to do is a message aimed at 80% of the homeowners, ignoring the 20% who are suffocating as if they really weren't there. And in reality, the numbers are much worse. The average amount of equity for all properties with a mortgage is only 32.8%. It's not out of the realm of possibility to imagine a scenario where the average amount of equity for all homes with a mortgage drops below the 20% mark. Many of those who think they are okay today are just a step or two away from joining those who are underwater and suffocating. What could facilitate that kind of sudden, negative financial setback? Rising interest rates, for one. And that's already happening. 30-year fixed-rate mortgages have shot up the past 8 weeks, from the mid-threes to 4.4%. One major bank showed 4.6% on their website. As interest rates rise, it's going to put pressure on any potential for rising home prices. higher interest rates will slow, stunt, and ultimately lower home prices again. We're getting ready for another repeat of the 2008 collapse, as you can start to see the same bad advice that was given to people leading up to 2008 resurfacing in the mainstream media. Remember Alan Greenspan speaking to congressional members and urging homeowners to refinance with adjustable rate mortgages? We know where that got us. In a recent article, a, quote, mortgage professional, and I use that term lightly, at Discover Home Loans said, people planning to live in a home for no more than 5 to 7 years might view an adjustable rate mortgage as a good choice, since they will likely move before rates reset. Oh, really? Can this mortgage professional see 5 to 7 years into the future? Do they really think the person acquiring an adjustable rate mortgage today is going to have their job 5 to 7 years from now? Have they considered we will likely be in or already experienced a repeat situation of 2008, and people will be unable to refinance their homes because they will no longer qualify to do so? Have they thought about the possibility of even more people becoming geographical prisoners to a home they cannot sell or refinance because they have lost their job and are now part of that growing demographic of people who are underwater and suffocating? Debt is the enemy of mankind. The middle class is being destroyed. More destruction is on the way. The banking crisis never ended. The housing crisis never ended. The employment crisis never ended. And inflation has never really been under control. 2% inflation? In your dreams. More like 6 or 8 or 10%. Depending on what metrics you use. With banks paying 1% interest on savings and real inflation at 8%, you're losing money just by holding it. This year is the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. Over that 100 years, they have managed to destroy 98% of the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. At the rate we're going, that last 2% is going to go fast. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.